from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 210, recorded live Thursday, April 8th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks the science of fitness with John Lamb.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I've got a really smart guy and good friend, John Lamb, from the Microsoft campus. How's it going, John?
I'm doing good, Scott.
John, you've always got cool stuff. Every time we talk, we end up talking for about 2 or 3 hours. I usually stop by and say, hey, how's it going? Do you have 10 minutes? And then we end up canceling meetings and stuff. And a little while ago, I had the idea that we should talk about some of the cool gadgets out there, because I know you've always got good analysis and good opinions, and oftentimes they are completely separate from my opinions. You were telling me about tracking your workouts via GPS.
Yeah.
What's this about?
So I used to do a lot of riding when I was a kid. Of course, you know, life happens, you know, afterwards, right? So I had plenty of time when I was in graduate school to go train and do a bunch of other fun things. And then when, you know, you get married and a bunch of kids show up, you pretty well have no time at all to do things until your kids kind of get to this kind of magical age, right? Which is where mine are right now. So I actually have some time to myself again, and I can get to go off and do some fun things. So one of the things that I recently started doing again was riding my bike, and you know, and being kind of like this kind of data obsessed kind of guy, I decided to start buying some more gadgets, right, to help motivate me, because in a lot of ways it's being able to do the measurement and seeing the progress and stuff that keeps me motivated to do this stuff. So this gadget that I just bought for my bike recently was the Garmin Edge 500. And what it is it's a head unit. So it's something you kind of clip to your handlebars on your bike. And really all it is it's a little time series recorder along with a GPS. So the time series recorder will obviously record your GPS. This is where I am at this moment, and do that on 2 second intervals. But what it also does is it collects data from sensors. So there's a protocol called the Ant Plus protocol. That was developed by a company that Garmin recently acquired. And the Ant Plus protocol allows a bunch of different devices, a bunch of these kind of exercise geek devices, to speak wirelessly to this head unit, right? So it will do things like, you know, with the right Ant Plus heart rate strap, monitoring strap, it will transmit that signal off to your bike computer. There's a little thing that measures how fast, you're pedaling, right, your cadence meter. So that thing is there. There's another sensor on the wheel that will tell you what your forward velocity is, which is generally more accurate than relying on GPS to tell you what your instantaneous velocity is. So that gets recorded as well. So what happens is these guys typically take their workouts, they upload them to some site. The big one is Training Peaks. And your coach will also have an account on this site. So while it's free for the user, the coach winds up paying, you know, fees to use Training Peaks, which kind of translates back into you paying more money to the coach, right, to get this kind of value-added analysis. And what they'll do is they'll kind of look at your data and tell you whether or not you're on track, you know, for the goals that you're setting, and to do kind of adjustments based on the data. So you can either analyze the data yourself, or you can hire somebody else to analyze the data, and more importantly, kind of plan what the next set of workouts that you're going to be doing are. And so this is all made possible, you know, through additional data. There's plenty of guys out there.
Remembering that you have to talk to me like I'm a 4-year-old here, because I probably have the cardiovascular system of a 4-year-old. As a happily sedentary individual, I want to understand why I would care this much about this much data. I mean, I'm looking at these screens and I see like a satellite route from the sky with a line showing where the person ran, like average power in watts, average watts per kilogram of physical weight.
Yep.
There's lots of charts and graphs. Why do I care this much? I mean, I understand why I would care if I was compiling code and this was like looking at like a dependency analysis and cyclomatic complexity. But here I'm just seeing colorful information that doesn't tell me anything. Why do I care this much? Don't I just want to have a good run?
Sure, you want to have a good run. It all depends on where. So the kind of analytical personality that I think is, you know, a lot of, you see a lot of people around here at Microsoft, you know, riding their bikes and running and doing a bunch of other things, right? And not surprisingly, the same people that have the inclination, I'm not saying that all software developers are people like to go running and ride bikes and stuff, you know, just kind of look around, right? But for the people that do have that, the kind of analytical bent that they have, really kind of drives them towards, hey, I want more information about what I'm doing, and I want to do it the right way, right? So a lot of this stuff is really about being able to train at the right intensity at the right times, right? Because you can't just go out there and hammer on every single workout, right? Because if you do that, you're just going to suffer, and you're unlikely to improve anywhere near as fast as you could if you worked out at precisely the right intensity. And in a lot of cases, it's a lot less intensity than you might expect. Right. If you're just kind of this type A kind of person that just wants to improve, right? More often than not, you're going to overtrain rather than undertrain. And so by being able to analyze and monitor precisely what you're doing and give you two things, right? Both the instantaneous feedback when you're actually doing the activity, as well as the kind of post activity analysis. You know, those are the ways that you can wind up making sure that you're doing the right activities at the right times.
How do we know what this, I mean, where is the science of this that tells me that it's a good time to work out versus a bad time?
There's an enormous amount of literature on this kind of stuff. So depending on the activity, right? So, you know, I don't know all activities, but if you kind of look at things like cycling, there's this kind of notion of periodization that you want to do, right? So you want to start off at different points in time, and you want to kind of increase the stress for some period of time and then back off. Right. So kind of think about it as this kind of stepping function, right? Where, you know, we're going to go up and we're going to get down a little bit, and then we're going to go up a little bit more, higher than where you were before, and then down a bit. So the notion is that you're by doing this periodization and by stressing your body and then giving it a chance to recover, and doing that on the right sets of intervals, you can peak for some important event. So give you a good example of this. If you look at how Lance Armstrong dominated the Tour de France, certainly during the 7 years where he won it 7 years in a row. He took a very unusual approach, unlike a lot of other guys, which was that was the only race he really cared about. He didn't care about any of the other races. If he showed up at a race, he was using it as a training thing or as a way to kind of support some of the other guys on his team that he would need to support him when it came time for his important race, which was the Tour. And so his entire season was built around peaking on roughly a two-week period in the latter half of July. Right, which is when you hit the mountains and in the Tour. And that's primarily responsible for why he was as successful as he was. And his coach, Chris Carmichael, is one of these guys that is extremely focused on this kind of data thing, right? So the magic number for the Tour de France, if you want to win the Tour, what you need to be able to generate is 6.7 watts per kilogram of body weight for 30 minutes. Right, that's okay. your kind of your CP30. If you can generate that much power for that period of time, you're going to win the Tour. And so that's the number that
you said for 30 minutes in a burst.
For 30 minutes, so that's the average power that you need to be able to generate for 30 minutes in order to win the Tour de France. Right, because that's the power that you need to be able to generate on the steep hill. Right, when you need to attack your competition. Right, everywhere else it doesn't really matter, but that's the part where you have to generate your peak power, and that's where the kilogram thing becomes important because. Mm-hmm. You know, these guys are obsessive about their weights. You know, cyclists are really kind of crazy obsessed about weight, right? Because it's all about, you can imagine how that affects that ratio and your ability to hit 6.7, you know, watts per kilogram. So, you know, a lot of these guys and a lot of the numbers that you do in your testing, right, is all about seeing whether or not you're getting closer to the set of goals that you need to accomplish the things that you want, right? So to win the Tour at 6.7 to, you know, be a nationally ranked rider, it's 5 point something. So, you know, you kind of get to see the number, right, that it takes for you to be competitive. All sorts of other things, right, that are around whether or not you're actually going to win, you know, whether or not you crash, whether or not you're healthy. There's a whole bunch of other factors, right? But some of those things are things you can't really control, right? But that's one thing you can absolutely control.
So I'm looking at this website by a guy named DC Rainmaker who does an analysis of this software called SportsTrax. And I'm looking at his screenshots and this, you know, it looks like a pretty fit guy and he does triathlons. And basically it's pretty clear that whether he has a job or not, this is what he does. I mean, he his job is secondary to this, his running physicality aspect of his personality.
Well, this is what he blogs about, right? He doesn't really blog about his job, right? He's some kind of computer guy, right? But he doesn't really say much more than he's some kind of computer guy.
Well, right. It's like when you meet somebody and they say, oh yeah, I'm an actor. And you say, oh really? You know, so what restaurant do you work at? They are an actor regardless of where they work. So here's a guy who's a software guy, even though he seems to be pretty hardcore. It says his average power is 3 watts per kilogram.
Yep.
So that tells me one thing, that this guy's incredibly hardcore, but still not even half as I don't know, powerful as he would need to be to compete at that.
When the tour? Oh, yeah. Yeah, the tour is a whole other thing than just being a guy that he does well, by the way, right? So if you look at his race results, this is a guy that does well. But yeah, you know, there's a world of difference between a guy like him and a guy like Lance Armstrong.
Well, then it brings up the question of what's the difference between this guy, physical guy, and me?
Well, there's a big difference between him and you as well. It's probably bigger than the gap between him and Lance.
Really?
Right? Like, you know, if you don't do this stuff, right, you know, it's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, like I saw you retweeting last night the video, right, of the NFL Combine, right? They had some sportscaster guy, right? You know, trying to do the 40-yard dash, right?
They had a random guy in a suit, which I thought was kind of a cheesy thing, and they filmed him running as fast as he could for 40 yards. And then they overlaid all the other people on the team.
Yep.
And it was pretty clear that the other guys were 3-4 times faster.
Yeah. I don't know if you know what the Combine is, but the Combine is where prospective NFL recruits go to kind of show off their physical abilities, let's call it. So there's a whole bunch of different tests, and one of the tests that they do is this 40-yard dash. And so I think the guy that the one at Jacoby was the fastest guy at the Combine. Jacoby ran it in 4.28, which is really, really fast. World-class speed is generally around 4.3. World-class sprinters will do a 4.3. So it's amazing. So some of the things that you might not expect when you look at, you know, kind of numbers like that. My brother works in this area. He's a high performance trainer in Toronto. And so one of the interesting things that they do at the Combine is see how high guys can jump, right? And so there's a whole science around kind of measuring, you know, and training, and so that you can peak on your vertical, because that's the best predictor of what your explosive power is how you can jump. So you see some of these giant NFL linemen, right? These 320, 330 pound guys. You'd be shocked at how high these guys can jump.
Mm-hmm.
Right, these NFL lineman guys, right, can probably jump, you know, the good ones can jump 35 inches. Now, to put that in perspective, the average vertical in the NBA is, I think it's somewhere around 25 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so this 330-pound guy can jump higher than the average NBA basketball player, and which is, like, again, night and day above, like, normal regular people that don't train for this kind of stuff. So it's really interesting to kind of look at the kind of science and the sport that, you know, that goes into training and for this kind of stuff. And a lot of it's just kind of driven by data. So the vertical thing is actually, most people do this just by jumping and timing how long it takes for you to hit the ground again.
Right. Now, interestingly, a lot of these people are focusing their training, and their coaches are focusing their training on, like you said, achieving a particular goal, winning a particular game, or maximizing their abilities during their reasonable amount of usefulness, right? I mean, an NFL guy understands he's only going to play the game for so long. I wonder if anyone does analysis to maximize one's life and health, because it seems like it's always the basketball players and the football players that are blowing their knees out or collapsing, which makes me think that maybe they're operating at peak intensity for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if a coach could be managing your peak output such that you're not trying to win races, but you're just trying to live a really long time.
Sure. So if you look at some of the other things that people have kind of created, if you go to a site called Fitbit.com, I don't know if you've seen Fitbit before.
Okay. FITBIT.
But what Fitbit does, FITBIT, yeah. They sell this little tchotchke for $100, and you clip it to yourself. And what this thing is it's got a little accelerometer in it, and the ability to record time series data again, right? And it's also got a transmitter so that when you walk by this this little sensor connected to your PC, it will automatically sync with your PC and upload the data up to the Fitbit website. And the idea here is what it's going to track is, you know, how many It's going to be able, obviously, right, since it's an accelerometer, it knows when you're sitting on your butt in front of your computer. It knows when you're walking around. It knows when you're running. If you sleep with this thing as well, right, with this little strap, it will also tell you how many hours of quality sleep that you got in a night. And it will tell you how long it took you to, you know, fall asleep, how long, how many times you woke up in the middle of the night, and a bunch of other things like that. So there, this is probably the most interesting device in the sense that it records what you're doing when you're asleep. And what that is great for is if you're back to this kind of I'm obsessed about numbers and hitting my numbers kind of person, it helps because this is one of the few things that's going to force you to sleep more because you get to see it, right? There's this old saying that says, you know, what Lord Kelvin said this, right, which says, you know, you can't, what you can't measure, you can't improve. And so back to the kind of quality of your life and your kind of sleep patterns and is a really big part of that thing. If you don't actually measure and write that down, you don't know.
Okay. This is interesting because this resonates with me more than the charts and graphs.
Sure. Right. This is a really kind of unobtrusive device.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman from another parallel universe. Got to tell you about some of our things our sponsors are doing. They make this free podcast possible. If you're developing a new line of business application, you've probably tried the latest version of Silverlight. Now you can get even better results by combining the functionality in Silverlight 4 beta with some of the richness of the third-party controls from our friends at Telerik. They're the first vendors to offer native support for the Silverlight 4 beta and their RAD controls. They've got a new Silverlight 4 CTP suite of these controls. They let you tap into the framework's great potential. You get native right mouse click and all the new features of Silverlight. There's 38 controls that give you all these features. You can start building those compelling line of business applications right away. I encourage you to check those products out at Telerik.com/Silverlight. And, you know, thank Telerik for supporting .NET Rocks, supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page at Facebook.com/Telerik. Now back to the show.
I did a thing recently with called a Zeo. Z-E-O, are you familiar with this device?
No.
A Zeo is a sleep, I think it's myzeo.com, Z-E-O, and it's a focused entirely on sleep. So it's not like the Fitbit in that it's focused on, you know, general movement and fitness, but it's a, they call it a personal sleep coach. It's at myzeo.com.
Yeah, I see.
And
this, yeah.
it looks like a clock radio. And rather than using an accelerometer, it's actually, you know, I don't know, zapping something into your brain and getting a general sense of whether your brain's on or not.
I see.
And it basically, it has four levels that it can measure. You know, are you awake? Are you in REM? Are you in light sleep? Or are you, you know, completely conked out in deep sleep? And then it comes up with a number they call your ZQ from 0 to 100 or 0 to something like that, some kind of an index.
Right.
And it gives you a sense of how you're doing. And basically, they take all of that data and they give you a nice chart and a graph if you care. But ultimately, they say, yeah, last night you slept a 73. And then you can go and say, oh, God, why did I sleep a 73? Oh, gosh, I bet you that if I closed the window, I would sleep. And then you get to look at that number. And
wow.
It was really, really useful. The problem was it was $300. It was brilliant.
Right.
I mean, everyone, I had a bunch of people went and did trials with it. There's a free 30-day trial. It's really popular. Everyone loves it. But
so have you used this yourself?
What's this?
Have you used this yourself?
Oh, yeah. I did the full 30-day trial.
Yeah, and you returned it at the end.
I returned it at the end because for two reasons. One, it's $300. And two, I sleep awesome. I sleep like the dead. So I don't need a machine to tell me that.
But did the machine tell you that you slept awesome?
Yes, and the machine confirmed that I slept awesome.
I slept
so awesome that the machine didn't have anything to do to tell me that I could sleep better. And one thing, though, that was creepy, though, from a biofeedback perspective was that it did tell me what I already knew, and it confirmed it very clearly. Like, I knew when I was up, and I knew, like, there was one night where I had some just crazy dreams. So then I said, well, this is a good opportunity to check to see if it noticed that. And it did. It knew that I was completely whacked out while sleeping. And the time that I thought I was, it registered on their chart. So, I mean,
so you
it
need to do things like tweet things
does.
Like that, right? Like, so I think some of the interesting things about these devices is they're kind of connecting to your social graph thing. So here's another example, right? Back to this Ant Plus wireless protocol we were talking about with the Garmin thing. They now have Ant Plus scales. And there's also scales that also do things like connect to the internet via Wi-Fi and stuff like that, right? So this is kind of part of one of the best ways of trying to achieve your goals is to kind of engage in public humiliation and shaming. So one of the great things is, you know, you go up and you stand on the scale, right? You know, each day or however often you want to measure yourself, and it's going to go off and tweet that, right? So there's scales out there that actually do this kind of stuff. And I think that, you know, there is something to this, right? Where, if you belong to a community of people that cares about some set of goals, right? You know, this kind of personal humiliation and shaming thing is actually a really good way of, you know, kind of reinforcing the behavior that you want out of yourself.
That's really interesting. I, as a diabetic, myself being a type 1 diabetic, I am obsessed with one kind of data, which is my blood sugar. And
yeah.
I have a continuous meter that's actually implanted into my abdomen. I have to move it once a week. It's basically, it takes about a 1-inch needle. You shove the needle in to your abdomen, pull the needle out, and then it leaves a big long sensor in, and it looks at the interstitial fluids and then measures the resistance that interstitial fluid provides the little battery, and then the more
right.
resistance you have, the more blood sugar you have in your fluids, and then the higher your sugar is, and then it does some correlations and some magic, and then it wirelessly tells me plus or minus 20% what it thinks my blood sugar is. And I always thought it'd be interesting to figure out a way to hook that up to my blog such that I
sure.
could dynamically update my blood sugar and thereby publicly shaming myself into not having that cookie.
Right. Like, think about, does that thing record the time series so you can do the upload later?
Oh, absolutely.
Or
it has 24 hours of data.
Okay. But the problem is it's probably inconvenient. You got to take it out, plug it into something, and run some crazy, crappy piece of software.
And that's the thing. The idea that I could just simply walk by it would be cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to
yeah.
have to think about it.
Yeah.
The older versions did USB. The newer versions do some kind of Bluetooth derivative, but none of it's automatic.
Right. See, that's where the Fitbit guys really nailed the experience, right? Because they know, hey, you're probably going to walk up to your computer sometime during the day, right, considering mm-hmm. the audience. And, you know, so when you do that, yeah, magic. The stuff just gets uploaded.
How long does the battery last?
Yeah. How long does the battery last? I don't know.
Yeah.
I still haven't got one of these things yet because they've been backordered forever. I think they're still backordered for another month.
Yeah, yeah, they're shipping at the end of April right now.
Yeah.
You know, they've got the price right, though. $100 is just about the amount of money that I would want to spend on something like this. But
yeah.
the fact that it does the sleep as well as physicality, I think, is kind of
yep.
a good idea. And then what's this about 10,000 steps? Doesn't that seem to be the number that everyone talks about for sedentary people? What is 10,000 steps?
You know, like, it's just some arbitrary number, right, which is what you need in order to get enough motion during the day that you're going to hopefully climb out of that sedentary bucket
uh-huh.
that you would otherwise be sitting in. I don't know much about that because I don't really care about the 10,000 steps thing myself. But
right, you care about GPS tracking of every move, and
I care about, you know, how fast I can go on my bike. Yeah.
Have you ever had a sedentary point in your life, or have you been fit the whole time?
Oh, hell yeah! No, I haven't been fit my whole life. Life got really bad for me back in the 90s, right, when I traveled a lot. Right, so when you travel a lot, as you well know now, you know, you're eating out all the time, right? So, you know, it sounds kind of glamorous and all that stuff, but the reality is a lot of times you eat crap. Other times you're eating, you know, at some restaurant thing, so you'll eat not necessarily crap, but expensive crap, right? And, you know, that combined with just kind of sitting around all day long doesn't really do good things for you. Because I remember at one point I think I peaked out at traveling 26 weeks a year. And that was also correlated very nicely with weight gain, right? So, but now I think, you know, I've just kind of got to this point in my life now where, you know, a couple of nice things is, you know, I now live in a very hilly area. So it's, you know, you're either going uphill or downhill around here, right? There's no flat in Redmond. And, you know, so that's been great. That's been great because, you know, just riding my bike, it's a great way of very quickly getting yourself back into shape at the same time because you have no choice but to climb hills around here.
Mm-hmm. How did you get out of being sedentary? Maybe I'm just cynical, but whenever I ask people how do you get unsedentary, they just say start moving, just walk 10 minutes.
Well, you start moving, right? But you need to do the right sets of activities to kind of reinforce the behavior that you want, right? So for me, I can't speak to all people, right? But for me, a big thing is being able to look at the freaking numbers, right? That's interesting to me. So by being able to go off and ride my bike, the first thing I do when I get into work is pull my bike computer off, plug it into my machine, and upload my data so I can go, oh, yeah, okay, now I see what. not that I didn't know what I did. I did, right? But it's, I can compare it against what I did in different days and other things, right? It's back to this, mm-hmm. because you're measuring it, because you're, there's this act of writing it down, even though there's no physical writing involved here, it really makes things better. So back to, I remember when I was a kid, and I rode my bike a lot. I used to have a training diary. And I wish I could find that thing again, right? Because that was an incredibly motivational thing for me, was being able to, after the ride, come back and write down, you know, what happened on that ride. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of that stuff, I find that the measuring thing is a huge part of it, because you can see the improvement. And once you can start seeing the improvement, it becomes harder to kind of not do something a given day, right? Because now you're saying, oh, but I like seeing that number, right? And that's something you're not going to have.
I wonder if this Fitbit might be a good start. I think about, there's the looking at your basic chart of, like, were you sedentary today? How many hours were you sedentary? And the number of hours of activity. But when you say looking at the numbers to see improvement, are you thinking about how far you went, or how long you were physically active? And you say, oh, look, this week I can run 15 more minutes than I could before. Like, what's improvement?
It could be any number of things like that. It really kind of boils down to the goals that you set for yourself. And that's why in a lot of cases it's really good to actually have somebody else help you set those goals. Right. So depending on how much disposable income, because that's an expensive thing all of a sudden, right? Because you're now paying for somebody else's time to help you set your goals. And there's various pieces of software out there that will also try and do this, right? So rather than the ongoing cost, you'd pay the one-time cost for the software instead. You know, once you kind of have your goals set, yeah, then it could be something as simple as, I want to increase my weekly mileage by 10% over this period of time as I'm building my base. So that's one, you know, way that you can measure your progress. And because you are measuring it, you know, you will see the times when you are slacking off or you're not doing things, right? You're not going to achieve your goals. And mm-hmm. And I think, again, right, that's the course correction that you get by having that kind of continuous feedback. Big believer in continuous feedback. I think that, you know, if you kind of look at where we're going with these kinds of sensors, right? Like, so we're in this kind of weird place where there's lots of these companies coming up with these arbitrary little pieces of technology, almost none of which actually talk well with each other. Like that, mm-hmm. I've got hopes for this Ant Plus protocol, right? Because we're seeing it more and more, right? There's actually scales now that speak the Ant Plus protocol, right? So for example, if you weigh yourself in the morning, that Garmin bicycle computer, if it's on at that time, right, will receive your weight wirelessly, right? That kind of stuff. So you don't have to go in and punch some number in, right? So it's all about removing the friction points and trying to get the data around. And I think that over time, you know, by having that data and having that data available at the right time to the right people, you can potentially have much more wide ranging changes in people's behaviors. So I'll give you another example of this. So my wife's grandfather, in the last year of his life, had a pacemaker. It wasn't a pacemaker. It was a defibrillator implanted on his heart. So what was interesting is when he went in for his checkup, right, every 3 months or so, they would kind of wave this wand over him, and they would go, oh, yeah, this thing actually went off this time and this time, right? So this thing actually kept him alive, right? His heart had actually stopped, and this thing had, you know, gone off, and he didn't even know. So what's interesting is okay, so for an old guy like him, that was something that kept him alive, right? But if you consider that somewhere in the future, right, you might just implant one of these things because this is a good thing to do. Mm. And once you have one of these things implanted, and assuming that you've got an interesting sensor network connected to your body, now you have this ability for your doctor to be able to go off and look at your time series data of what your heart rate was like since you last visited the doctor, let's say. Or not just having the doctor being able to see that stuff, but also for you to be able to see that same data so that you can do this kind of self-correction of your activities. Right, it's kind of like wearing a heart rate monitor all the time, right? You know, if you have the defibrillator in there, you know, it's essentially the same thing as having a heart rate monitor implanted inside of your body. I'm really hopeful that the more kinds of sensors we get, we're also going to have this ability to have a device take that data from your body and upload it into the cloud, let's call it, right? You know, somewhere on the internet, so you can do this analysis later. So, and now imagine that you've got all of this data up in the cloud. I think there's some really interesting opportunities for us to do much more interesting studies of people's behavior, right, to hopefully come up with ways to try and correct some of the problems we have, right? Certainly, we know all about the obesity epidemic in the United States. And, you know, what are the kinds of things that might actually work as motivators? Because now you actually have data, right? Because before you didn't have any data about this stuff. All you know is, yeah, people sit around and watch TV all the time, right? But now you potentially have an opportunity, right, to try things and get instant feedback. And it's all about closing that feedback loop. So it's not just about having feedback for you individually, but it's also potentially having large clusters of people to get this kind of feedback back on, let's say, a societal level as well. And that's where I really see the kind of technology trends going in this area.
It's interesting from a thinking about it in the context of privacy. Like, I wish that we could tell all of these different accelerometer-enabled phones that people have in their back pocket to suddenly start acting like they are a Fitbit. But, of course, everyone has to opt into that. But I wonder if we'll get to a point where it'll just be in your pocket and
yep.
maybe you'll have to do – I see this is the thing. Every time you try to think revolutionary, it starts sounding like 1984 and you're spying on everyone. It's like, well, you know, maybe sure. If you want to have really good health insurance, then you have to turn on your phone and it'll tell us whether or not you're a fat ass or not.
Yeah, those privacy things are really scary, right? Like, you take a look at another little gadget that the Nike has come up with, right? The Nike Plus. Stuff where you essentially insert, it's not an accelerometer, it's actually a switch that you put in your shoe, right? So when you step on it, the switch goes off, and when you step off of it, right, the switch, right, you know, turns on and turns off. And so there's a little computer, probably a little computer, but it is. It's a little computer inside of this little pod that you put in your shoe. And what it does is it measures the time between the switches going on and off, right? Based on that, mm-hmm. It can determine how fast you're going, right? So lots of people have that, you know, the Nike Plus shoes actually have a little kind of, insert, those kind of carved out section of the shoe that you can plug one of these things into. And people actually around here at University of Washington have gone off and used that to invade people's privacy, right? Because they have a little sensor that can also listen in on the signal, right, that's being emitted by this thing, because it's a wireless transmission to some kind of unit. It could be your iPod, mm-hmm. or it could be, you know, a phone, a little watch that you get from Nike. So people listen in on this, and so they can actually identify individuals when they go by, right? Because each one of these things has a unique ID.
Right.
And so they can kind of track where people are going and stuff, right, over some limited range, right? Because you'd have to have these sensors everywhere, mm-hmm. right, to track where everybody goes. But it's things like that, right? But the reality is if you carry a cell phone, right, somebody somewhere knows where you are.
If they wanted to know.
Yes.
I mean, they're not.
Yes, the data is there, right? They might not be looking all the time, but who knows, right?
Interesting. Well, you've given me a lot to think about, John. I really appreciate you sitting down today and talking to me about technology and fitness.
Sure. Yeah, no worries.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll talk to you again next week.